So hi everyone, my name is John O'Sullivan. Wow, that's loud. And today we're going to talk a little bit about how people are using bots and intelligent agents to solve business problems. So I think that all of us here today are probably aware of, you know, the bots from major technology companies, things like Alexa, Cortana, and Siri. And you may or may not use them in your everyday life, but what we wanted to do is introduce some folks from some people who are building bots today for use inside their enterprise or use within consumer solutions, and really have you understand, outside of the very well-known intelligent agents out there, what you can be doing with this technology, how people are recognizing value with this technology, and give you an understanding of different solutions that can be achieved by implementing bot or intelligent agent technology. So with me today, as we look across, is John Thierkoff from Bank of New York Mellon. He's a managing director in their innovation group. And then we have Graham Hackland from the CIO of the Williams Racing Team, and Dale Linneman from Microsoft. He's a developer with our TED organization. So I thought what we'd do is simply start off by having the folks introduce themselves and really then explain a little bit about what they're doing with intelligent agents and bots today, and then dive into some deeper questions. And at the end of the presentation, we'll have time for questions. So John, just starting with you, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you're doing today.
So I first have to tell you that it's kind of intimidating because, and I don't get intimidated very easily, but given the fact that you all are in the cool industry, like entertainment, you're dealing with cool stuff, we're boring bankers. I can tell you a couple of cool things about our bank. So we're the one that was, we named our bank after the musical. Hamilton, our founder. So, okay, so there's a bad joke. Sorry, John. See, it's too early in the morning, mate, to start this. Bank of New York Mellon's the oldest bank in the United States. It was founded by Alexander Hamilton. Our robots are named after Alexander, so every single one of my 250 bots that are in our virtual workforce today are named Alex, with a whole series of numbers after them. We're doing quite a bit of things with RPA, robotic process automation. We're starting on our chatbot journey now, experimenting with some things there. So we'll get in a little bit more about that and look forward to sharing some of those stories with you all.
Graham?
So good morning.
Click it up. Yeah.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm here to represent the rookie when it comes to bots and RPA and tell you a little bit about our decision making. Williams are a very interesting company. So you, for those of you that know anything about motor racing, you may know us from our Formula One team, which is 40-year-old this year. We just celebrated up at Silverstone in the UK. 50,000 fans came just to watch Williams run some old cars and some old drivers around the track. So it's a team that is very well thought of around the world by people because of Sir Frank Williams, really, which is one of the main reasons that I joined the team, was to be part of trying to get Williams back to the front of the grid. In the first 20 years of the team's existence, they won 16 world championships, and in the second 20, zero. So we want to get back to the front of the grid, and it's tough. John and I were talking this morning. We're lying fifth at the moment, so it's not a great season, and it's certainly not easy. But we get up every day and we work hard. And the other main reason that I looked at Williams and wanted to join them was the advanced engineering company that we have, that is one of the world leaders in electric vehicles. And probably most people don't know us. We started out building a hybrid supercar for Jaguar. Then we built some really interesting cars for Aston Martin, all electric. The first electric Rapide was built by Williams, and we're now going into production with them. Nissan Blade Glider. If you want to look at a very sexy electric vehicle, have a look at the Nissan Blade Glider that they launched at the Rio Olympics. These are all vehicles that Williams have developed for some of these major OEMs. And they come to us because we take the knowledge and expertise that we have in Formula One around lightweight materials, aerodynamics, electrification, and we work at a pace that they simply can't match. So that's why they come and work with us. We've done some things in retail, helping helping retailers to push cold air back into fridges using an aerofoil, so the rear wing of a Formula One car concept, force the air back into the fridge, working with a few hospitals on some really interesting technology, including something called a baby pod. So if a baby's born prematurely and it has to be put into an ambulance or a helicopter, we've built this unit that is made out of carbon fiber. And the thing I love most is when we're making a front wing for a Formula One car and we pop it into the oven overnight, we also have two baby pods in there in the spare space that's left over. So it's a really interesting company involved in Formula One, which is kind of in your world, recently purchased by Liberty Media. We're expecting Formula One to change significantly over the next couple of years. We're already seeing some significant changes in how we engage with our fans. And when it comes to things like automation, we've started some pilots to look at Blue Prism, working with Avanade to see can we automate some of the routine, mundane tasks that take up people's time. For us, it's not about reducing headcount, which is often where people start this conversation. For us, it's about freeing up people's time to help make the Formula One car quicker.
And Dale? Turn the mic on.
All right. So I'm Dale Linneman. I work with Microsoft. I work with a lot of partners out there in the media industry. So I actually have hands-on time working with bots, working with the partners, and addressing issues, solutions, you know, anything that you guys come up with that you want to use to help improve your users. I've been with Microsoft within various roles of the technical side for about 10 years, working with a lot of different partners, as I said. One of the things I'm going to talk about kind of is more some of the bots that we've already built that we've used in partner scenarios or that will be coming out in partner scenarios. I can answer questions as well about, you know, if you guys have specific scenarios that you're thinking about a bot and how it could apply. We've used scenarios, everything from customer service to tech support to email support. And, you know, this is just a really big growing industry, and we're starting to really see bots pick up a lot of speed. And they're really starting to kind of bring a new angle to customer service and bring in user retention. So I'd like to cover all those areas with you guys. And hopefully it's not too early in the morning for technical talk.
So Graham and John, a lot of what some of the automation you focused on is internally sort of enterprise focused. So maybe we could start by you could explain what business value these bots or robotic process automation are providing for the organization, and give people a little bit of context around any of the specific solutions that are coming or being built inside the organization.
So I'll take a stab at it first, because again, Graham's is much more sexy than mine. Race cars, you know, all that cool stuff, and we're just banks. And we're actually a pretty different, we're a different bank, because you guys probably don't even know BNY Mellon, because we're actually kind of the back office to the back office. Now, the good thing about us and the kind of the dangerous thing about us is all big banks are, we hold $31 trillion of safekeeping money for the world. If you want to understand what happens if we shut down, so does everybody else globally. So we have to run. We are a global G-SIFI. That means basically we're a global central financial institution, which means we are designated as one of the primary links in the chain that holds all of these things together, making sure that ATMs work, make sure that everything works, that money flows, that transactions flow, trading flows, the Microsoft stock sales work, all those kind of things have to work.
It's really important.
Yes, it is. And so we do a great deal of that, and we're pretty proud of our heritage. And one of the things that we've been asked to look at in my team 2 years ago is how do we use automation to help us drive better risk profiles. When we make a mistake, you all probably hear about it. When little things happen, like we can't make payments work, we can run into hundreds of billions of dollars worth of payments being stuck in pipes. Some of the applications that my bots are working on, Alex X Number, are helping sit side by side in a virtual world beside people that will handle more complex payment where our STP, our straight through processing, doesn't work. And these processes will kick out payments that may come from very strange third world type banks that just don't seem to meet our profile for risk. Well, we train Alex how to go through risk assessment, go looking up information, pulling the information back. If it works, he'll execute the payments automatically himself. If it doesn't, he'll kick that over to a human who will have to do what we call a secondary, tertiary type of investigation. Before, that was all done by humans. It usually takes us about 13 minutes on a complex payment. Alex does it in 1.3 minutes. So he is a pretty fast guy. Oh, by the way, I'm not a sexist. Do you know why all Alexes have to be male? Simple. Because the only species on the planet that can multitask is a female. And RPA technology can only run a single task. Now, we have found out there are ghosting tasks they can run behind the scenes. But for general purposes, a robot can only do one thing at a time, and it does exactly what you tell it. So as we heard earlier about Skynet and some of the other things that people are worried about, I'm not too worried about it yet. Yes, you could probably plug all these things together at some point in time. We're plugging things together, linking robots to robots, robots internally, and we're working on projects now that will link our robots to our customers' robots. So you begin to look at, well, wait a minute, you have the same problem that we do. Why don't we figure out how to automate them using RPA? Because that actually is probably a little more economical solution than telling the guys in technology, let's rip up the floorboards where all the underlying old application layer is, try to reconfigure that, and then make that work with each and every single one of our clients. That's a very, very expensive proposition for financial institutions. So that's an easy example for us. We have about 250 virtual workers, we call them. We schedule them by shift. They work 8-hour shifts. We run pretty robust scheduling profiles. We can work them in India. I have bots running right now in India during the, we're running in India that then went over to work in the UK as the UK came online, and now they'll start working on tasks assigned to them here in the US. So a very, very flexible workforce. They don't get sick. They don't complain. I don't have to do performance reviews. I never have to worry about raises and bonuses and those kinds of things. So we're pretty happy with our Blue Prism virtual workforce. So that's just to give you one example. We have about 100 different, 110 plus automations that we're doing right now across different, everything from client facing tasks to really back office stuff. And our job really is to become better, faster, and more efficient at what we're doing. And that's really our job with my innovation team.
So, John, it's really great to know that when my uncle in Nigeria sends me money, you have a
We're
way to
keep an eye on it. Definitely from that country, yeah.
See, money is sexy. Yeah.
Graham, you could dive into what you're thinking about.
Yeah, so, you know, just bear in mind again that I'm the rookie in the room. We're a very early stage. So if you're in the same situation, and a lot of these events that we go to, there is a wide mixture of people like John who are really making a difference already and have been running it for a couple of years, and then people like me who've run a pilot and are looking to drive it in. We decided to go at it from a IT perspective. I wanted the IT folk to be really comfortable with it so that as the demand grows, we're not going to have resistance from IT and the digital team driving it and IT trying to block it. So I wanted to make sure that IT was comfortable with the technology. So we started with the help desk and automating some of that. About 90% of every help desk ticket that comes in, we have to have someone respond to that end user to get more information. So it's a waste of time, and it really reduces the number of tickets that we close first time fix. So that's where we started out. We are putting Microsoft Dynamics into the organization, and we're at a fairly early stage with that. So we've decided to build automation in right at the beginning. And you'll hear I'm talking a lot about automation. I heard John using the word bot a lot. I don't use the word don't talk about robots or bots in our organization. So one of the things I'd say to you is whatever language is appropriate in your organization, that's the way to go. For us, when we talk about bots and robots, we're talking about our factory of the future project, where we're linking aerodynamics, physical wind tunnel, the virtual wind tunnel, design, manufacturing, and the race team, and we're creating this closed loop cycle of telemetry and data, and we're putting automation, and when they think of automation in our business, they think about the robots that are building the car and building parts. So I talk about process automation more than bots. And we've built our program within our AI framework that we've got, where we're looking at how can we drive decision making that we make on the pit wall by humans, how can we drive that to an AI engine. So I predicted that by 2020 we'll call a pit stop in Formula One without any human intervention. The driver will come into the pits and it won't be a human that's made that decision. Now we'll see whether the humans allow that. All right, the technology is there already, I think, and we're just building that capability. So the first step is to give better data to the humans using AI, and then once they're comfortable with that, then we won't remove them completely, but we hope to make better decisions more often. But for us, we already see, so we're going to deploy process automation into finance, because that is again a really obvious way of, we waste so much time when a purchase order doesn't match an invoice, which doesn't match the purchase order request, or so those are some easy things that we're going to hit. What's going to be more complex, but we've got a few years to do it, is around our manufacturing capability. The number of times that we make something that doesn't get onto our Formula One car is a real waste of money. And you said money's not sexy. Money is very sexy. When you have the fifth or sixth biggest budget in Formula One, you want to be much more efficient than the guys who are just spending as much as three times more than we have. So we're really driving efficiency, and that's where our AI and our process automation projects are coming from. It's all about being more efficient, freeing up people's time to be either more creative. So we've got designers who are spending time dealing with drawings that they've done that the part that's made doesn't quite conform to the drawing, and there's all this manual intervention back and forward, and we want to automate a lot of that so that the guy who's operating the machine on the machine floor isn't having to walk over to design to go and check with the designer, what did you mean by this? I can't make it the way you said. And we see lots of possibility for technology. I know that Liberty Media are looking at possibilities for virtual reality and the reality solutions in Formula One. So we're looking at it as well. Could we have a designer looking through the eyes of the mechanic at the track, at the car, and seeing that part that you designed doesn't quite fit? I've made a slight mistake, or actually I want to make a change to it. We'll have the machine in the machine shop manufacturing the part for the very next race for the next weekend. What we want to be able to do is automate that whole process so that when the designer sees something through the eyes of the mechanic, makes a change to the drawing, gets signed off by the chief designer, and the machine that's busy making that part stops. And as long as it hasn't actually machined the part that's changed, it'll then just carry on with the up-issued drawing. Whereas for us, we end up making that part and not fitting it to the car and wasting money. So that's our thinking in terms of process automation. Drive out any inefficiencies across the back office, but at the same time, let's make a real difference to manufacturing and our factory of the future.
So it sounds like both of you are very focused on having these intelligent agents, these bots, help your workforce to start and really help them be more efficient in their job and get away from mundane tasks. So Dale, just to switch to you, you've been working a little bit more on the consumer side. Maybe you could talk about, you know, how some of the bots you've been working on are creating consumer value.
Yeah, so I come from a little bit different area where these guys are kind of using it in their areas. You know, I've been working with a lot of the partners in their different industries. Media and entertainment is kind of a big thing to tackle. You guys have everything from content to, you know, support tickets and things like that come through. Coming from the media side, some of the things that we've really been focusing on is content and getting that content back out to users. A lot of times, you know, there's large catalogs, you have this massive catalog on the back end, and you have new content coming out, but how do you get that old content back to a user? And that's kind of one of the way that we've been really utilizing the bots to kind of bring that content back to the forefront. The way you can use that is kind of, you know, when the user starts interacting with the bot, you kind of start building a profile, and they might start talking about some show they like, and you may be able to connect that on your back end with back end analytics and metadata. And that's a great way to bring a show that maybe was 10 years old or a movie that was 10 years old that is in direct relation to a new movie. Say, you know, there's a lot of remake movies out these days, and one of the biggest things now is kind of you have the crowd that loves the old ones, and then you have the new younger crowd that they see the new one and they've never even heard of the original. It's a great way to kind of connect those two dots and say, you know, hey, you like this new movie, how about the old original? Check that out, you know, and it's a good way to kind of bring and refresh that old content. Going to more of the analytics and kind of numbers side of it, you know, we talk about sports a lot. Sports has a ton of numbers. As everyone knows, you know, everything is kind of tracked these days, mostly through, you know, computerization and analytics that are tracking, you know, pitches, speeds, shots, all of that. This is all data that sits there, and you know, right now big data is huge. everyone's attracting big data numbers, but then what do you do with that data? How do you take that data and make it use, you know, for you to help increase something or make it better than just say, you know, some guy that wants to read about his favorite pitcher or something on how his stats are. So you can take those numbers and put them through a bot and actually use them to kind of go deeper and inform, you know, your user if they're diving down into something about their favorite team. You know, there's all the fantasy leagues and everything like that. You know, that's all a great way to kind of bring these numbers to the forefront of the user, you know, experience of when they're actually interacting. Going to the next side of things, you know, then we have the traditional customer service, tech support. This is something that kind of traditionally goes through, you know, phone calls or email, things like that. The human side of it is great, but, you know, a lot of times call volumes are really, really high. You want that user to get some quick help. Say if even if it's something where a user's stuck on originally buying your product or setting something up, they have a quick question. How can you address that customer's question immediately? You can give them a manual to read through. I don't tend to use instructions, so, you know, I don't think the manual works the best with me. But, you know, like a quick chatbot or something is something that you can relay that information extremely quick back to your user. You know, how do I put this piece together? That's something that you can really quick relay an image back to them. And that's where kind of Microsoft comes in, is we're building a lot of tools, a lot of framework that's really making this something that you guys can implement quickly. We actually just built out a tool as well that is actually takes your FAQ from your websites or your informational pages from your websites. And what it does is it's called Q&A Maker. And it essentially takes that question and answer and puts it into a bot format. It's that quick and simple. Now, of course, there's fine-tuning. And of course, with all bots, you know, they learn as they go and they get smarter and better. But, you know, these are the kind of tools that we're trying to build so you guys can take and put that into real practice and start improving them. Kind of like they were mentioning before, you know, for me, bots is kind of a funny word. You know, it's some people you say bots and some people think of very simple chat bots. Some people you say bots and they think, you know, Skynet AI. It's such a wide range, and really it comes down to the problem you're addressing, but I think it all still falls under that umbrella of bots. And that's just kind of what we're trying to do, is really find out all these areas that we can harness and improve them. And I'm sure you guys have heard Microsoft's been extremely, extremely active in this whole industry area. And we've been building out new tools, pushing out updates, and, you know, working with everybody we can.
So actually, just to touch on what you just mentioned there, it sounds like there's a lot of different levels of chatbots. So maybe you could describe a little bit about what the different levels are, what the different experiences are. And then maybe, John, you could also comment about, you know, for yourself, you mentioned that the bots you're building are very task-oriented. Are there different complexities to them? So, Dale, do you want to just talk a little bit about levels of bots and how we think about that?
Sure. So one of the things that we have is a lot of people ask, like, how do you handle this bot? Where does it live? What does it do? How does it talk? And that's where we kind of enable our channels. We have channels everything from Office 365, where it can integrate right into the Office 365 suite. We also have chat messengers. Everyone knows Facebook Messenger. Huge platform. You can integrate your bot right into that. Coming to the level side of it, you know, that's where it starts kind of getting interesting with the different channels. You know, you have the messenger, which may be something great for, say, a business where you want to contact that user through Facebook or something. But you can also go as far as the email, and that can be, you know, a much more old system that you have, but bring something that's much more complex. When you have email, you have multiple questions being asked. You have things that can be prompted via that email to respond with longer and more in-depth email returns. Going to more of the internal side of it, that's another side that we're really starting to hit a lot more in bots, is how can we offer internal help to people? And that's kind of also the next level of more in-depth bots. That's where you start getting to using Slack, Skype, things like that, where you can really start kind of harnessing, you know, your internal internal information that you wouldn't pass to the external people, but keep it very complex for people that, you know your key terms and things like that. And that bot can learn those terms and really return back in-depth information that's pinpoint accurate on what your engineer or maybe your customer service tech or, you know, your lead, anyone who's actually asking a question. So there's kind of a lot of different levels in that sense. And then going kind of more back to the media side of the level, one of the things that Microsoft has, something called MurphyBot. And what it does is you can ask it, you know, I got a long beard, so one of the questions is, what if Abe Lincoln had a really, really long beard? So what it does is it actually uses Bing Image Service. It grabs an image of Abe Lincoln, And then it grabs a really long beard picture from, I don't know, there's probably thousands on the internet, oddly. And it'll mash the two images up and return them to the user. So you can do things like that, you know, and kind of, you know, what if Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, you know, had the same, had Brad's face on Angelina. It'll actually morph these two images together. So the complexities of these bots are starting to grow where it's not all just text-based. You know, you're starting to get deeper things where you're harnessing pictures and media.
So, John, I guess as you kind of describe it, when you talked before, you talked about how these bots are providing automation for existing systems. Maybe you could provide a little bit more detail on that, how you're leveraging all of your existing investments and building something on top of that.
So ours is, our platform today is not at the level that, you know, Dale's speaking about again, and I can understand that. We have a strategy that's built off of an ecosystem design. And our ecosystem started with Blue Prism as our base foundation, which is an RPA provider, robotic process automation tool. And for our buck, it's probably the best one out there that we found because of the flexibility it allows us. And we work at an enterprise level, so we don't do desktop automation. There are other tools that are really good at doing desktop automation. We have to automate things at an enterprise level, scalable across global time zones, across multiple platforms. And so you have to have a tool that's allowable to do that. And not all RPA tools are made equally. The other thing is that when we started with this 2 years ago, we realized in about 4 months that RPA alone, the tool, the technology, does not solve our problems. So hence came the design elements that said we have to build an ecosystem. So our ecosystem meant that we needed something that was more of a task or a metabot type of a scenario, metabot being described as, I only will do what you tell me to do, it doesn't think. So then that, therefore, we needed something else, which means we need to now start moving up the scale. So I had to have things like smart form technology. I needed things like OCR, ICR technology because Alex can't see. He can't read. So I needed a way to ingest data. And the problem with all that we have today in the robotics field is this thing around unstructured data. Robots do not deal with unstructured data very easily. So how you structure that data and the ecosystem you build around it to allow for automation to happen is what we are now building out. So we have to bring in those tools to help do that. So we have different levels of the ecosystem that we will plug into our existing processes through reengineering to reengineer processes for automation. I'm an old Six Sigma guy from GE. We never automate things, before we re-engineer them. And the new thinking around re-engineering is I am throwing the baby in the bathwater out. So I don't do the old style re-engineering anymore. I actually design anew. And the design anew is I design with automation in mind, and I only keep manual where I can't automate. So that means the ecosystem that I'm building has to have ML capability in it. So we're bringing in tools like Python, Hadoop, and others. I have a data analytics team, I have a big data team, I have an ML team, so all these pieces work together to form the ecosystem. So depending upon the situation that I'm faced with in the bank, it dictates what part of the ecosystem I'm going to plug together. Now this is relatively new thinking. We sit outside of technology, which is also an interesting little trick. I sit in operations, report to the COO. I'm a hillbilly from Kentucky and a psychologist by training, and they're all looking at me going, how in the hell do you know how to program? And I said, that's a longer story. So these are the kinds of things that you deal with when you're implementing these things in a non-traditional way. And in our arena, implementing robotics or any of these types of technologies, especially in financial services, is non-standard. This is not BAU for us. We're not in a field where we're used to having really cool all the time discussions like this. We're usually trying to make sure we don't piss our customers off too much and we get payments out the door and we keep money safe and we do those kind of things, not thinking about, how do we automate that thing that we've been doing the same way for 25 years? That's the challenge. And when you have people in those jobs that have been doing it the same way, remember I said people. And now we're talking about, well, wait a minute, I'm going to put a software that has this cool name about robots in it. All kinds of change management come into play that you have to deal with. So we have a pretty sophisticated ecosystem we're building up. My counsel for anybody going into this space, this is not about technology. This is about change and managing change. And probably the reason why they gave this to me to lead because of my background in psychology. You do have to make this work. And you're still going to deal with people no matter what you're dealing with. The big data and all the cool things that you can do with pattern recognition and all the insights that you're going to gather mean absolutely nothing if the people you're presenting it to are just already shut down mentally. So it's a very keen observation that we've been making that you need to make sure you spend as much time in the change side of things as you are on picking the right technologies, where you're going to apply it, how your customers, trust me, your customers don't, you know, they all ask for these things, but they're not necessarily that keen on it either oftentimes because it's going to require change to them. So, you know, I think, again, for us, it's been an interesting and continues to be an interesting learning experience. I will, in my comments on this topic, in one very interesting little way, we use you all in your field to give us benchmarks. We look at things, and I tell this to almost every customer that we speak to, which we do this about 3 or 4 times a week, that the biggest challenge we have is that thing that we probably all have in our pocket, our purse, or somewhere near us called a mobile device, because it has changed the paradigms by which people transact business, transact their social life, and their personal lives. And that challenges every company around us that says, well, wait a minute, I can get, and they always do the same thing, right? They pull out their phone and go, look, right now I could go on and get Uber to do this, or I could order my phone. Like, yeah, but we're a 233-year-old bank, and they got to start from scratch in a garage. So it's a big difference. And that's where the change component comes into this. It's not about the technology as far as we're concerned.
So I think that we're close to time here. So it is, if there's any questions from the audience.
Any question? Raise your hand if you have a question. I'll run over to you with a microphone.
Sorry. Up in front?
Down in front?
This is for Graham. How, with AI and given that the nature of your business is auto racing, how far will you take it to automating driving to that effect, since that is kind of a hot topic now?
Yeah, so the technology, again, is there. And there's a lot of, we haven't really touched on digital ethics today. And just because you can do something, should you? I mean, so I think, will we see, you know, autonomous vehicles in Formula One racing anytime soon? I hope not. Because the most interesting thing is the nut behind the wheel, right? Who crashes into someone in the first corner, who makes a mistake, who gets out the car and throws things. Formula One fans tend to follow a driver. Other than Ferrari, who have a lot of fans who just follow Ferrari, no matter who's driving for them, most Formula One fans will follow a particular driver, either a countryman or someone that just inspired them for some reason. We're already seeing, so Formula E, which is the electric formula that has been set up over the last few years, I think we're into season 4 now. They have a robo-car that goes to the same circuits they do, and it runs before they do, and they've got to the point where the technology is good. For a single car. They put 2 cars on the track. It didn't go so well. So we're getting there. But who wants to watch a bunch of engineers and software developers racing cars around a track? Not me.
Great. Anyone else? Just to get back on time.
I think that's it. I think we're out of time.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, panelists. Thank you, John, Dale, Graham, John, and John.